This is Windy City Sports Talk, hosted by Will Hatzel. Windy City Sports Talk features all the latest news and in-depth analysis for the Bears,
the Bear,
Bulls,
the Bulls,
Blackhawks, Cubs,
holy cow,
and White Sox.
You can put it on the board, yes!
It's time to talk Windy City Sports.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Windy City Sports Talk. I'm Will Hatzel. Thank you to everybody that's been listening to this podcast. The last couple of weeks, there's been a huge surge in listenership, and I've also discovered there's been some people subscribing on Apple Podcasts and people favoriting the podcast on Anchor.fm and other places. So I appreciate all the listenership and the continued growth of the podcast as well. And also a shout out to everybody that's been coming on as a guest. I know people, them sharing this to their Twitter pages and their listenerships from their podcasts and other things that they do definitely helps bring in more attention and more people into this one. So definitely been seeing a lot of success and a surge in listenership. So I do appreciate that. But hey, that's not the only positive thing to talk about today. This week, I'm kicking off a two podcast special with talking about baseball because both Chicago teams are in the playoffs. And actually, as we speak, the White Sox are up 3-0 in the game one against the Oakland Athletics. So I know the White Sox fans out there are happy about that. Tomorrow, I will be doing a podcast covering them. But today, it's all about the Cubs. And I have my good friend Ryan Walsh back on to talk about their chances here in the playoffs and to kind of recap the regular season because Ryan came on a couple of weeks ago at the beginning of the season to help me preview and talk about what we thought about this team headed into the 60-game season. So without further ado, let me bring Ryan in here. Ryan, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. How have you been?
Hey, it's great to be here with you, Will. I've been great and looking forward to talking with you about the Cubs and the whole playoff picture, bubble, whatever you'd like to call it in this strange year.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, you got to say bubble now because they are playing in a couple different locations. And I believe it's Texas and California and just a couple of the stadiums, you know, trying to, you know, it's just the life in the pandemic. But they were able to get the season, you know, completed even with a couple hiccups with the Marlins and the Cardinals. But happy to see that they were able to get a season completed. And, hey, it's always great around this area when both teams make the playoffs. I mean, it's huge for the Sox. They haven't been in the playoffs for, like, 12 years. I just read a crazy stat before doing this podcast with you today that Adam Engel from the White Sox hit the first Sox postseason home run since Jermaine Dye. And, I mean, that's wild because Jermaine Dye hasn't obviously been with the team for a very long time. So it's huge for them. I'm excited to do a podcast about them tomorrow. But I must say I stand corrected today because I really was worried even in a 60-game season and with all the circumstances that the Cubs would make the postseason. I'm kind of surprised still. I mean, because even after that 16-4 start, I think it was, when they were just absolutely dominant in the first 16 games, they kind of petered out and went back to that strikeout, low batting average ordeal that we've seen the last couple of seasons. So before we get into the playoffs, just want to get your thoughts on what did you think of this Cubs season? Was it better than you thought when we chatted at the beginning of the season?
I think it was more stressful than I thought it would be. That's one of the things I got out of this season. The pitching was so much better than we thought it would be from the starting to the bullpen. I mean, the bullpen had a rough first 10, 15 games of the season. And I mean, Kimbrel was like on the Chicago's most wanted list from fans because of some performances that he had, and he closes the season out on a great, great run. Pitching has looked fantastic pretty much all the way through the season. The hitting, we thought that when we talked initially, right when the season was starting, that the hitting was going to be pretty good, you know, playing against the division and having all the home games at Wrigley Field during the summertime, good weather, thought that the big bats were going to just be popping all season long, and that was far from the case. So, like you said, you didn't think they were going to be in the playoffs. I thought they were going to be a wild card team. Pretty similar line with what happened with the Reds. The Reds thought they were going to have better hitting, and their pitching carried them like the Cubs did.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that I thought it was going to be the offense, the bats that were going to be more successful for the team this year. And to be fair, at times at the beginning of the year, the offense was looking good. I thought Rizzo started off pretty well. I mean, of course, you know that, you know, Schwarber's going to provide you with a bunch of home runs. Baez came up clutch a couple of times early on, but it kind of seemed like they went back to their old ways where, you know, Javi's striking out all the time and he's just swinging like a madman. Ian Happ was impressive at the leadoff spot and was impressive but at times, but I don't think you can count on him to be your consistent everyday hitter. I mean, when Jason Hayward has like the highest batting average on the team, you know, I think he ended the season hitting .265. That's saying something, because as much as we appreciate Hayward's tenure as an outfielder and the speech during game 7 of the World Series, I mean, there's some memorable things there. Even the stuff he's doing off, you know, off the field, baseball outside of the sport is great. But the fact that he's your best hitter is very telling of a bad situation, I think, with this team. You know, even with Chris Bryant, like a guy that's trying to prove that he deserves that big contract he wants, and he's injured on and off again, and really didn't hit the ball well until like the last two games of the season when he hit the grand slam against the Sox, and then I think he followed through the next game with another home run. So I think there's a lot of concern there with the offense. But pitching, I am feeling pretty good about the pitching, and it looks like the wild card lineup is going to be it's going to be Hendricks, then Darvish, and then if necessary in game 3, it will be Lester. So no surprises there. I was actually just wondering if they were going to – I figured that maybe Darvish would pitch game 1 and then Hendricks. I figured Lester would be in that game 3 if necessary spot, because I know he's been a little shaky at times this year. But do you have any major concerns going into the postseason here, which starts tomorrow afternoon, by the way?
I think the concern is what everybody has on their minds is the bats. You know, the Marlins don't have the greatest pitching rotation. You know, they've got some bats that are pretty alive. So if the bats don't get some runs early, you know, it's going to be a lot of pressure on Hendricks. We've seen Hendricks this year, just like he has in the last couple of seasons. You know, he's pitching a great game. He gives up 2 or 3 runs and he takes the loss. I mean, he finished with a 2.88 ERA. I mean, really, really a good ERA for him. And he has a 6-5 record because the bats and a couple of those games where he gives up two runs or 3 runs, he takes the loss. So the bats are what concern me. And, you know, as you mentioned, like early on in the season, there was a good stretch from some players. Hayward had a good stretch. Rizzo's had at times some good stretches. Baez and Bryant are the two that really stick out like a sore thumb to me in terms of concern. Bryant did have the good weekend at Guaranteed Rate over the weekend. You know, he got hit in the hand early on in the season, and then he had some other injuries. You know, it seems like the last 2-3 years with him, he just can't catch a break and staying healthy. You know, he got hit in the head, and I think it was 2018. He was off to a torrid start. I mean, he was just tearing the leather off the ball. He gets hit in the head. And, you know, it just seems like when things get rolling for Bryant, something happens again. And for Baez, I can't make excuses for him. He's playing like a little leaguer. You know, it's what killed the Cubs the last 3 seasons down the stretch, 2017, 2018, 2019, and the difference between 2016 is they were getting those clutch hits. They were playing at the plate to get on base, not just swinging for the fence every time. Baez, he's reverted back to his old ways, man. He's golfing for pitches that are way out of the zone, and he's not being patient. So, you know, many broadcasters said it this year, Baez 0-1, Baez 1-0. It's a totally different batter. And it's hard at times to watch Baez. Yeah, he's you know, he breaks off the end of the bat. He gets a bloop hit that wins the game. But it's not easier or fun to watch when he's playing like the way he has been this season.
Well, and I think the Cubs are just continuing to lack what they've honestly lacked the last couple of years, is just having that a pure leadoff guy, or just a guy that could be a consistent hitter that, you know, maybe he doesn't have to hit a whole bunch of home runs, but just a guy that, you know, the Tim Anderson version of the Cubs, you know, a guy that could just get a bunch of hits every game, have a high batting average, and just, and produce offense in his own way by, you know, driving in runs, you know, when guys are in scoring position. And that's something that I think this team lacks. And that's why I still to this day am still upset that they didn't find a way to re-sign Castellanos, because he had a fantastic year with the Reds for the most part. And again, a guy that can be a consistent hitter, can be that leadoff guy, a reliable outfielder, and also can send the ball to the bleachers. But the problem is this whole lineup from top to bottom, Ryan, it just seems like everybody's like kind of like that power hitter that could hit it out to the bleachers and hit home runs. And that's great to have power in your lineup. That's what the Sox have. But the Sox also have guys that could drive in runs and just get on base. And it's either a big play or bust for this Cubs offense. And that's a problem. And I think essentially that was a big reason to why I think it drove, you know, Joe Maddon out of town. I know we've had some other beliefs and opinions of him too, but I mean, that offense was pitiful and it kind of went back to the same thing. So, but on the bright side, you know, the pitching, Darvish 8-3 this year, his ERA ended at 2.01, almost had it under two there, but a couple weeks ago he had one shaky start where he let up a couple of runs and that kind of ruined that run for him. But Hendricks got better as the season went on. We, you know, had a good storyline with Alec Mills. Jeremy Jeffries has been pretty solid coming, you know, from the bullpen. So looking at where we're at, you know, we're worried about the Cubs offense. We know the pitching's not perfect, but it does seem to be better than what we thought it was going to be. Chris Bryant, like I said, grand slam and a home run in that last series against the Sox. And also the Cubs did put up 25 runs in that weekend series against the Sox, which was pretty impressive and I think was huge going into the playoffs, trying to awaken the bats. With all that being said, these storylines here, and like you kind of just mentioned, not really strong pitching for the Marlins. How do you think the Cubs fare against the Marlins here starting tomorrow? Do you think the advantages play into the Cubs' favor, or do you think the Marlins could be kind of that underdog wild card team?
You know, I think the Marlins will give the Cubs a challenge. I do think the series will go three games. I think the Cubs will advance over the Marlins, but I think the Marlins will give the Cubs a run for it. I mean, they've got some good bats in the lineup. Brian Anderson is doing a solid job this season for them. You got Garrett Cooper that has been their DH for most of the season. Miguel Rojas and Jesus Aguilar, who's former enemy with the Brewers, who has hit some big moments in his time with the Brewers. And so they're not going to go quietly. They're a young team that, you know, I think a lot of people are going to pick the Cubs to win. So I think the Marlins will play loose. And I think it's going to be brought back. I mean, this isn't – there's nobody on this team from 2003. But I think the Marlins, people are gonna play that up in the media the next couple of days with the first trip from the Bartman series in 2003, the NLCS. I think that's going to get some play in the media. And they're going to try to – kind of get in the Cubs players' heads and things like that. But I think the Cubs are the better team from all around. And when you have the experience of guys like Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo, and Contreras, and Schwarber in that lineup, I think that I don't know who it will be, but I think some of those guys are going to just – They've kind of realized that this might be the last ride, because with the stagnant offense at times, and Lester may or may not be back next year. I think that little motivation, and they had a tribute video they played on the video board for John Lester. I think this is going to be a really motivated team. You know, they may not win the World Series, but I think that they're going to get out of this round and maybe get as far as to the NLCS. I do think – I'll just jump the gun a little bit. I think that the Dodgers are just going to be really a tough out, other than possibly getting upset by the Brewers. And that's because if the Brewers can get a run early on or two, that back end in a really short series, that's got to be a nightmare for the Dodgers with that bullpen that the Brewers have. I mean, those are four or five guys out there that are just – vultures. I mean, they are fearless against whoever they're pitching against, of course, Hader. But I think the Cubs will dance a little bit here in October. I don't think it's a World Series team. I don't know. I'm trying to give you a pick on who I think it's going to be that comes through, but it's just been so far hit and miss. for all of these star players.
You know, I'm comfortable with saying that the Cubs are going to pull away with this series. I do agree. I think it's going to take three games. And to me, it shouldn't. Like, the first 20 games of the season, Cubs would take this team in two games without a problem. But given the fact that how the season's panned out with going back to those same old struggles, that they're not new. They've been around for really the last, like, three seasons, unfortunately, is that they just lose that spark offensively and everybody just comes out and literally plays the same way with striking out and grounding out and all this frustrating lack of production offensively. So I do think the Marlins do take this, you know, to the maximum. And yeah, you know, you brought up, you know, the history between these two last time that they met in the playoffs. The fun fact, which was, I believe, the last time the Marlins were in the postseason, was when they met in 2003, the National League Championship Series, and the Cubs squandered that three-run series lead and lost in seven games, which we know all the storylines there, so we don't have to torture ourselves with that. But it is an interesting fact. I mean, I guess, you know, good, of course, for that franchise. I know they've been through a lot of, you know, turmoil, I guess you could say, with tragedy and frustrations with, you know, everything that's been going on with that team the last five, six, 7 years. In more recent history. So good on them for making it and for surviving everything with the COVID issues at the beginning of the year. So that's a team I don't think you take for granted. I mean, the Cubs shouldn't have had to worry about this team, in my opinion. I mean, they started the year looking like a strong team that could potentially make a deep postseason run, but I absolutely lost all confidence in them. And you make a good point, too. It could be the last hurrah for a guy like Lester. This core, this lineup may not look the same next year. I'm not totally banking on it changing because I feel like they could have changed it the last two or three years and they haven't made the big move. But maybe Theo decides to shake it up, which I think he should. And I would actually be in favor of not bringing back Lester. But the offseason moves will definitely come in another podcast. But in terms of, I want to take a look at the managers here real quick, because you got on the Marlins side, you got Don Mattingly, who has had some postseason experience and some success back in the day when he was leading the Dodgers. So this is somebody that's not his first rodeo. Well, it's, you know, it is for David Ross in terms of being the manager. So kind of a two-part question here for you on David Ross. One, what did you think of him in his first year, or really his first 60 games as manager? And two, you know, following through with your answer here, with depending on how you answer this, are you confident in him managing the Cubs here in the postseason in his first go around as manager rather than player?
You know what? I liked how he wasn't as quick to pull a pitcher that's doing well. You know, all those times that Madden would let, or would take Hendricks or give a quick hook to Lester over make all these bullpen changes. I mean, it's a different era now with the bullpen. You got to let a guy face three batters, so it's a little bit of different analysis and dynamic for the game. But I feel more confident with Ross managing a bullpen. Obviously, it's hard because people are going to say, really? That the Cubs have is not the 2016 Cubs bullpen that was just incredible, where you had Strope handing it to Chapman down the stretch, and some sixth and seventh inning guys, you know, getting one batter out. You know, you just don't have that this year with this bullpen. It was such a roller coaster, especially with this first 2 weeks of the season. There was thought that the Cubs would be nowhere near the playoffs because of how the bullpen was blowing 5-run leads, 7-run leads. I mean, just night in, night out. I do think that Ross's first year was successful. I think, as you mentioned, there's going to be some roster changes, and I think there's going to be some roster changes. And in Madden, he had his flaws, but this roster has flaws, and that's on Theo. Theo has done a lot of ducking the criticism. You know, he claims he's accountable and you know, has to make decisions and things like that, but it's he's thrown a lot of blame around, and you know, he's done some quick small items for pitching and starters and bullpen guys over the years. Theo's got to make some kind of drastic move. If they want to get another ring with some of these guys, there's got to be some kind of lineup change made between the two, or I should say the one and five spot. There's got to be some more giddy up at the top of the lineup. They got to get a leadoff hitter, and there's got to just be a clutch guy, more consistent clutch guy, bringing guys in, because Bryant, Rizzo, Baez, Contreras, Hayward, or the big five players remaining from that 2016 World Series have shown that they're good to great, but not elite at delivering results. So I do believe in Ross, the manager's team to the playoffs, and I think there will be some changes made. And I think the Cubs, I'm feeling a little bit more confident for them going forward. Based on, I think that they realize now that they're going to have, with all these batting averages and the way the peaks and valleys were, I think Ross is going to get handed a better roster next year. So I do believe in him going forward, because you get a good roster, it makes it a lot easier for a manager to manage.
Yeah, in the first 60 games here, I've been a fan of him. I don't really have any complaints. I mean, to be fair, I think given the situation of an altered season and literally playing in a freaking pandemic and just everything he's had to deal with in his first year as being manager, I think it's fair to cut him a little bit of slack. But I don't think there's really been any slack to give, because you're absolutely right. He's managing the roster that he was given, and as we keep saying, it's been virtually the same roster for the last couple of years, and it's been the same roster and the same results, and it's been a lot of disappointment and a lot of struggling, and even some of the trade acquisitions that come in, like Jose Martinez has done nothing. I don't even see him in the lineup anymore. He only played in 10 games. He walked once and struck out seven times. That's the best I can give you on the lineup here. And as I'm looking at the stats, he didn't register a hit. He went 0-for-21. Now, I know they didn't break the bank in terms of trading a bunch of prospects and things like that, but you trade for a guy to come in and make an impact, didn't make an impact. You know, Billy Hamilton, they picked up after he was released. That could be decent, because, of course, he's going to be in for strategy in terms of, you know, being a pinch runner and things like that. But at the end of the day, yeah, I just think Theo has to step up and realize that, hey, the 2016 fun feeling, fun factor, we're 4 years removed now, and the team's not playing well. It needs to change. And I do think that core needs to be shaken up a little bit.
Now, we thought that they were going to just keep raising up their level of play because they were so good that year. I mean, you look at that roster, and you know he's disgraced and no longer part of the organization, but he almost had 100 RBIs, and that was Addison Russell. Bryant and Rizzo both had 100 plus RBIs that season. You know, Contreras came up in the middle of the year, first pitch he hits a home run for his career. Even Hayward had some good hits in that season. He had a horrible average, but that was his first year he came through. Remember, there's a big comeback win over the Giants at home, last game of the series, that they were kind of staggering. They were back and forth in wins and losses, and gave him a big boost at the end of the series. He had a couple big hits. Of course, Schwarber wasn't part of that season. He tore his ACL three games in against the Diamondbacks. Baez was, you know, second base, shortstop, fill in because Zobrist was around, and Russell was the shortstop. You know, he really hadn't proven himself. He had a good 2017 and good 2018. There's just so much potential and so much hype that these guys are going to get better, and that was going to enable them to, you know, just sign free agent pitching instead of developing pitching, and they've done no development of pitchers in the minor leagues, and that's been a major problem why they can't really make any big trades for hitters or for pitching, because they don't have it in the minor league right now. We've seen this too much of this the last couple of years, that the parade has got to end. And especially, you know, say they do get beat against the Marlins, I think it's going to be a really rough offseason of wondering and questioning. But to me, I know it's a shortened season, but there's nobody on this roster that's looking like they're worth more than $200 million for a contract. And that's going to hurt feelings by saying that, because what guys are getting overpaid over the years. But you saw with Hayward, Hayward was a good player with the Cardinals and the Braves, not an elite player. I mean, he's an elite outfielder, but he was never really an elite batter. So if you want to win another title, I just don't see a big commitment of $200 to $300 million from any of these players. They've proven for a couple of years they're good to great, but not elite. And elite guys are the ones that get those kind of paydays. Look at Machado. He's killing it out in San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, the Padres, they've got a fantastic team right now with everything that they've been able to build and accomplish. Another fun young team. I mean, honestly, I think the two most exciting up-and-coming teams are the White Sox and the Padres. And we thought that's what the Cubs were going to be in 2015 and 2016 and then beyond. But I guess the only good thing that comes from the struggles is that definitely, you know, decreases the value of Baez and Bryant. I think Baez still has more value than Bryant at this point because of the health. And I mean, you know, Baez can produce when he, you know, could get out of the rut that he always seems to get into, but we'll see. I mean, definitely that's going to be something interesting to watch this off season. I mean, unless they make a deep run or go to the World Series, I don't see how this team doesn't have at least one major shakeup in the off season. But
And talking about Lester, Lester was brought in to be the ace of that staff, to mentor these younger guys. And, you know, his when he signed with Theo and Joe Maddon, he was the ace at that time. Arrieta was a lot better than what people thought he would be, and they won that trade with the Orioles. And the goal was to slide Lester back to the end of the rotation. He was supposed to be, at this point, the fourth or fifth pitcher, but the Cubs didn't develop pitching. They haven't signed. They've had some misses, Chad Wood and other guys in free agency rotation. So Lester is the three guy right now, and being his age, he doesn't have it. I mean, he's had cancer. He's had long runs in the world in the playoffs with the Boston Red Sox. He pitched in a postseason for the Athletics on that season that he was traded to Oakland, and he's had some long runs, extra innings pitched with the Cubs. You know, that he's worn down. So I would be open, if the Cubs are serious about a playoff run next year and they make some moves and they bring in a pitcher to move Lester back to the rotation. If he's your two or three you're leaning on next year, then there's no way you can bring him back. But if he's six or seven wins away from 200, you bring him back to the back end of the rotation, I'd take him in a heartbeat, because he's a gamer. But with the way that things have happened, He's just gotten too much strain, and he shouldn't be the number three pitcher. And it's scary that you're trusting. I mean, not that he can't do it, but it's hard to trust the upper 30-year-old pitcher on a short season and a short playoff series.
It absolutely is scary. But the thing is, Ryan, who else would you put in there? Like, I know they're going with the reliable option in terms of the guy that's been there and done it throughout his career. But yeah, exactly. I mean, your next best option, which I don't feel good about, would be Alec Mills. And he's a guy that I love the storylines. I love how he worked his way up. Like, it's a fun story. I think he could still have a promising future. Like, you know, he definitely has proven that he could potentially have a spot in that rotation going forward. But I don't think Alec Mills has been consistent enough, and I'm not ready to say, yeah, you know what, he should start a postseason game. But yeah, it's kind of scary. Like, the confidence you have in Lester for potentially a game three, it's win or go home scenario. The confidence isn't high, and really, I'm gonna stick with the pitching here, because I'll ask you about it. How you think Darvish and everybody's gonna do here, but in terms of, again, what you're looking at, what they might do pitching wise after this season, I believe the contracts are up for Quintana and Chatwood. I personally say you dump those two guys, and I would let Lester go. I would free up that money and go after somebody else. I know they're not going to go. There's nobody. I don't think there's really anybody out there, you know, like the next. I don't think there's like a Garrett Cole type of guy out there, but I know there are some decent names that are going to be on the free agent list that, you know, might be worth bringing in. Hopefully they don't get reckless and give a huge obnoxious contract out and have another like Yu Darvish situation or again, another Chatwood situation. But I truly think you shake up some of the arms in the lineup. And then I don't know. I still say you make a big move and you trade somebody and maybe you know, if you were the trade Hap or Contreras or somebody else, maybe you could package a couple of guys and bring in a pitcher too. I don't know if that's the right way to go about it, but either way, Theo has to do something to shake up this team in both with the arms and the bats. Like it's definitely going to have to be a couple of moves, but sticking with the pitching here, cause I want to revert back to this wild card matchup. How are you feeling about Hendricks leading it off tomorrow? And do you think Darvish can continue what he did during the regular season into the postseason here with pitching with confidence and dominance?
I absolutely go with Hendricks because Ross has seen him pitch in a Cubs uniform in the playoffs. He's been in that dugout with him. He knows what makes Hendricks tick. And that game one, he's pitched a game seven. He's pitched big time performances for the Cubs in the playoffs. I believe he was the pitcher game six when they closed out the Dodgers in that NLCS as well. Hendricks is absolutely the right guy. I love what Yu Darvish has done. He proved me wrong many, many times, other than the opening day game where his opening start where he went four innings or something like that and a clunker down the stretch. He was pretty good. But when it comes to playoff time, we have seen Yu Darvish in the playoffs with the Rangers uniform on and with the Dodgers uniform on. I know there's still no fans there, but he is a very soft person in my mind. Until he proves in the playoffs that he is not, I have a lot of skepticism. I have a lot of worry for Yu Darvish in the playoffs. And I'm still thinking that this season was a fluke because there were no fans in attendance. So it took a lot of pressure off Darvish. I don't think he will do this again next year. I really don't. So he concerns me for game two. And that's why I think Lester will close it out in game three.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about in terms of the mental game with him because, yeah, he's already got a track record of struggling in the playoffs. And, you know, he's admitted to having confidence issues and hearing voices in his head on the mound in postseason games. So, of course, rightfully so, to be obviously anxious and nervous, you know, heading into this one. But if anything, I think if they're going to make a run, if they're going to get past the Marlins and make a run here or attempt to make a run, his game two matchup is crucial. If he can come out there and have a solid performance and win that game, that obviously will help with the voices in the head and the second guessing and everything that, you know, rightfully so, everybody could have. You know, Lucas Giolito probably went on the mound today. I mean, he's actually dealing right now for the Sox, but I mean, even him, today was his first career postseason start. You know, everybody's going to have the butterflies in the stomach and whatnot, but it's those guys that could shake them off quickly and get out there and play at a high level and be efficient. And with him, it is reasonable to be worried about how he does perform. And last question here on this wild card matchup, Brian, this is a tough one, but if you had to pick an offensive player to click in this, you know, this first round of the postseason, who are you most confident in? Is it a guy like Rizzo? Is it Contreras? Do you think Bryant heating up there at the end of the season's key? Or who do you think could be key and could step up to the plate here for a postseason run for the Cubs?
You know, in this series, I'm going to take Rizzo because he's a Florida guy. He's going to add a little extra motivation for him playing against his home state team. And being from not too far from Miami, I think it's going to be Rizzo. That'll be my pick. And my biggest concern out of all these guys is still Baez.
Yeah, I agree with you on that stuff. I will say I think it's reasonable to say Rizzo would, but for the sake of me picking somebody else, I'm going to go for the heck of it here. I'm going to say Contreras because he started playing a little bit better. He's got that flair and that competitiveness. I think the offense seems to be better when he shows up. Obviously, when your catcher could provide a chunk of your offense, that's key for any team. I think a guy like Contreras or maybe even Ian Happ, I don't know if it's going to be one of your big names like Rizzo or Baez or Schwarber or Bryant. I do think Bryant plays a little bit better than what we would have probably originally predicted because, you know, baseball, it's not always about what you did all season. It's how you're playing right now. It's what kind of a streak are you on? Are you on a hot streak? Are you getting on base? Are you getting hits? Or are you slumping? Are you striking out? Are you going 1-for-4, 0-for-4, you know, on consecutive games? So I think that that little offensive outburst for the Cubs against the Sox in the last series of the season might come back to eventually help them out and maybe kickstart them. But I don't think they're not going to have an easy time against the Marlins because I think, unfortunately, they're just mostly going to do it to themselves. But at the end of the day, I think the Cubs do take this series in three games. And did you say the same thing or what was your prediction again?
Yeah, I said three. And also keep an eye out. I think Rizzo will be the guy, but Bryant's had a pretty good run against the Marlins in his years with the Cubs. He's done a pretty solid job hitting against the Marlins, especially at home. 4th July 2015, hit a grand slam and also a home run later on in that game against the Marlins. He's had some big numbers at times against the Marlins. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, coming off that two game hot streak and wearing the two chains is the new mantra, the new alter ego of Anthony Rizzo. And we know Brizzo is a real thing. He gave the two chains to Brian, and he had a big Saturday and a big Sunday. So we'll see who comes out with the chains on for tomorrow. But yeah, I think Cubs in three. I think they'll have a couple of scares in games 1 and 2 and 3. I think there'll be a competitive series, but I think the Cubs will win it in three.
Yeah, I tell you, you know what? Whoever could wear the lucky chains, wear the lucky socks, wear the lucky underwear, bring in the lucky bat, wear the lucky suit, I'm all for the superstitions and everything because I think this team needs as much help as they could get. But hey, I did want to ask you, for the heck of it, a fun question here, and maybe we can aggravate the Sox fans if they do happen to listen to this podcast. But because I wanted to mention this to you earlier when we were talking about Contreras and some of the other guys, but in that weekend series against the Sox, everybody kind of got a little bit fired up and a little bit upset about that Contreras bat flip. I was curious to get your thoughts on the whole situation. Did you think he was a little bit out of line, or do you think Sox fans need to shut up because, hey, if Tim Anderson can do it, why can't somebody else from a different team?
You know, I see it both sides, but you know, at the end of the day, when you're a team that started that all at beginning of 2019 with Tim Anderson and the Royals, the big time bat flip and then getting hit, you can't have it both ways. You know, if you're gonna be advocates of, you know, it's time to stop with the unwritten rules of baseball, it's time to have fun and do all this stuff, and then somebody does it against you, whether it's a rival or not, you can't come out complaining and crying about it. And I'm not gonna take any shots at White Sox fans. It's a rivalry and the fans, not necessarily the teams. So I know the fans are really upset with it from the White Sox. I got a whole slew of text messages about it. And I, you know, I just said, okay, Tim Anderson last year, Tim Anderson. And, you know,
that's,
I didn't
like
get any responses.
So
yeah, that's all. I mean, I don't really care for the bat flips. I mean, unless it's in the playoffs or unless it's like a walk-off major hit, I don't really see the necessity of doing it or why they do it. But Contreras came out and said, I felt like we needed a big hit and we needed a little swagger, a little boost. Okay, enough said. He moved on. White Sox come back and peg him, and then they're complaining, and you know, that they got suspended. The manager got suspended. Well,
do you think they intentionally hit him?
Oh, they did, and that's why there's a 3-game suspension. You know, and the manager was suspended as well. So I can understand both fan bases defending their team, but as somebody, you know, because Tim Anderson started that whole debate last year, you know, he started the whole debate. It was a regular season, early on April game, and that he did that. He's a great player, but he opened up that can of worms last year doing that. And then it was talked about all of last year, and it carried into this year through some bat flips. So I don't really want to hear the complaints from the White Sox fans because it all started really last year. You know, Joey Bats 2015 and 2016 with that big bat flip in the playoffs, and that got attention. He got hit the next time around. The Rangers hit him, and, you know, beanball in the playoffs. It's different in the playoffs than the regular season, but it's also different when it's a rivalry game. So I understand the gripes of both fans, but I'm, again, telling the White Sox fans that were blowing up my phone and are really upset about it. Hey, you started that whole conversation of when and where it's acceptable to do the bat flips. So
exactly. I didn't even have a problem. I've never had a problem with it. In most situations, I think you're allowed to do that. And most of the time I will, whether I'm a fan of the opponent, the team that just gave up the home run, or even if it's my team, like in this case, you know, with Contreras, okay, if the Cubs were losing 10-1 and he just hit a solo shot to finally get them on the board, then I'd be like, no, round those bases and get in the dugout and tell your team, let's go and let's fix this, you know, because obviously you're losing. Or, I mean, to be fair, maybe we could say, since we're so, you know, since we keep beating up the team for the poor offensive performance again this year, is that it's like, no, hit your home run and just move on. But can you please continue to hit the ball? Can you please continue to score runs? Like, I mean, we could twist that too, but at the end of the day, I don't really have a problem with it. Okay. It's not really that hard to throw a baseball bat up in the air. So it went a little bit higher than what they usually do, maybe with the flips. Who cares? I would say if he made some inappropriate gesture or made some inappropriate comments to the White Sox bench, then I can maybe understand a little bit of ill will. I've never been a fan of hitting. I have not been on the let's hit all the Astros players hype train that kind of went around at the beginning of this season. You know what happened with the Dodgers and I forgot his name, but the one pitcher that got suspended from them. People are applauding him like a hero. That's dangerous. I mean, you brought it up too with how many times Chris Bryant has been hit with pitches and how that's kind of messed with him playing and him being out for games. We've seen guys get seriously hurt from wild pitches and stuff before. So intentional stuff like that, and that was an intentional pitch to hit him. I totally believe it was intentional. So the White Sox trying to cover it up with their pitching coach and obviously their manager trying to, you know, argue that. And again, everybody remember, I am a 50-50 fan when it comes to baseball in the city, because it's not my favorite sport, so I think I'm allowed to like both teams. I think I get a pass on that. So this is me being critical of another team I like too. So I think it's only fair if it goes both ways. So I think White Sox fans on Twitter that kind of erupted after that need to take a chill pill, because like you said, Ryan, they're the ones that created this whole thing and kind of started this movement last year. So they got to deal with it. But before we wrap up, one final question for you here. We did mention this quickly at the beginning of the podcast, but how they are playing in bubble locations for the playoffs here, such as Global Life Field in Arlington, Texas, Minute Maid Park in Houston, Petco Park in San Diego, Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. And then I believe they're going to the NLCS for sure. All of it will be at Global Life. The ALCS will be at Petco Park, and then the World Series will be at Globe Life Field as well. So just curious on your thoughts. Do you think the bubble is a good idea, or do you think it doesn't really matter since they played an entire season traveling from city to city?
I do like the bubble idea, especially at this time of the year. Weather is starting to cool off in a lot of cities where playoff teams are in. So the doors and windows are closing now due to the cooler weather. I don't want to get too political here with the COVID. I know a lot of people think it's a hoax, and there's people that think everybody's going to die from it. We see it every year when the weather gets cooler, the doors and windows close, we're trapped, we're inside. Think it's easier to get sick. So I think it was right. You don't want to see any, you don't want to see any star players left off playoff rosters, because they're not going to stop a series. They're not going to stop wait 14 days or whatever the amount is for somebody to get healthy. So you got to have the best players on all these playoff teams there and healthy. And you know, the NBA had success with the bubble, and so did the NHL, who just wrapped up with the Lightning winning it last night. So I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. The cities were kind of interesting to me, how they picked them, with California and Texas both being hotbed states for the COVID. But I guess they're going to be in bubbles. You know, you won't. They're going to figure out a way to totally cut off their access to everything outside.
You know, you talk about weather, those are, you know, like, you know, some hot places, unfortunately, hot places for coronavirus, but also climate wise, I guess maybe it's good to play in warmer places, obviously, because you're right. We are approaching and heck, maybe even technically in it now. I mean, we're pretty close to, you know, that fall flu season now because it is officially fall.
Yeah.
So it could very well end up being a very good idea because heck, even today we saw with the NFL, the Tennessee Titans and Minnesota Vikings have closed up shop until Saturday, and now their games are potentially, well, they might even play Monday Night Football. I heard those rumors are coming out, but the NFL's having their first, I think, legitimate scare here with a couple of positive tests and some exposure. So this might be a good idea, a pretty good idea. And hey, fingers crossed that they were able to manage a successful season. I hope the postseason could stay the same too, and they, you know, everybody gets a fair shot. If the Cubs are going to lose, I want it to be because they sucked on their own. I don't want it to be because they had three or four guys not be able to play because of COVID. So, yeah, I kind of agree with you. It's probably going to pay off in the long run. So, but hey, Ryan, thank you so much for coming on again today. It's always fun talking to you about baseball, and I'll definitely have you on again. You know, we're either going to talk baseball or I'd love to talk to you about football, or maybe we do a combo show. I don't care. I'm down for anything.
Not a lot going on outside for me other than sports. So I'd love to do both. Combine, throw it into one or do it two separate. I got time for you. Well, always will.
All right. Awesome. I will definitely stay in touch with you, and we will definitely make that happen. So, all right. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Thank you to Ryan for coming on. And again, like I said, thank you for everybody with the surge of listenership recently. And of course, if you can, like, subscribe, leave a review or whatever you want to do, wherever you get your podcasts on whatever streaming site. So thanks again, everybody. Go Cubs, go White Sox, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to Windy City Sports Talk. You can find more episodes on Anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Until next time, be well.